Welcome to this podcast by The Rocks Church. We hope you find it challenging and inspiring. For more information, visit therocks.church.
Thank you, band. That was kind of terrifying, seeing my head that large up on the screen. I should use this to pluck the white hairs out of my beard. No. Thank you so much for having me here, Rocks Church. It's my honor and my privilege to be up on this pulpit today. Pastor Dan is actually a mentor of mine that I meet up with. He mentors me. So this is a great church. This is a great church to be planted in. This is a great church to grow in, to serve, to contribute to. And right now, my church, they've finished, but they're in Leaderville. You know, there's a church out there, and I'm sure there's other churches as well that are being blessed by the ministry and the excellence and the know-how of this house. And so I just want to thank you all, even my executive pastor. He's met up with Pastor Mike and talked about how much of a wizard he is and that I need to find a guy more like that. But no, you guys, this is an awesome house. And I know how, I've been around church to know that second service is where the energy is. Am I right? Why doesn't everyone stand to their feet? Stand to their feet. Have a stretch. Rotate your shoulders. Tap the person next to you. Tell them, lean in, lean in. All right, you can sit down. That was all I had for you. But, you know, across the global kingdom, first service is everywhere. They know how to receive, but second services, they know how to respond. They know how to lean in. That's where the energy's at. So let's get straight into it. Isaiah chapter 5, and this is a bit of a weird scripture to start with, but stick with me. It's going to go somewhere, I promise you. Verse 8, woe. Everyone say woe. Woe to you who add house to house and join field to field till no space is left. Woe to those who rise early in the morning to run after their drinks, who stay up late at night till they are inflamed with wine. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes. Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and champions at mixing drinks. This is not an anti-alcohol message, okay? We're going somewhere. Woe. Everyone say woe. Woe, woe. Woe. So we have the prophet Isaiah. He's calling out various woes. He's calling out various sins. Woe to this. Woe to that. Woe to him. Woe to her. Woe to them. But then in the very next chapter, we read this. Isaiah 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up. And the train of his robe filled the temple with glory. So I said, woe is me. You see, Isaiah the prophet, representative of God, he's just spent chapter 5 dishing it out. Woe to those who do this. Woe to those who do that. Woe to this person. Woe to that person. But when Isaiah sees the Lord, all he can say is, woe is me. For I am ruined. I'm undone. I can never be the same again. I'm unraveled. I'm now a different person. He goes on to say, because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Woe is me. The only ever time we can actually call out the sins of others, the only time we can ever moralize over someone, the only time we can ever exercise in self-righteousness as believers is when we're actually not seeing the Lord properly or we're not seeing ourselves properly. It's the only time we can do that. Isaiah, he's been calling out this, he's been calling out that, but when he sees God, all he can do is call himself out. Woe is me, I'm ruined, I'm undone. Revelation of his own standard in comparison to who God truly is, God's level of holiness, it changed him forever. And Isaiah, he would not have thought of himself as a sinful man. He was a chosen prophet. He was a mouthpiece of God, walking and fulfilling God's plan over his life. He was standing up for righteousness. But when faced with just how below God's standard he truly was, he was ruined to what he was doing, and it changed him forever. When faced with his own unworthiness, his own uncleanness, the first part of himself that he references was his unclean lips. The reason being, this is the part of himself that he was using to serve God. Suddenly, it became his honor and his privilege to even be able to serve God. And he calls out his people for being a people of unclean lips because they were God's people. They were unworthy to sing the praises of God. What a privilege it is to sing the praises of God. When he was able to assess and see himself clearly, his ministry changed. It evolved. He went from calling out individual sins to declaring prophecy over nations. And you see, when we understand who we are and who God is, when we can step out of any form of self-righteousness, it actually transforms ministry in our lives. It transforms what it is to serve God. We evolve out of a place where we feel the need to moralize over others or to engage in acts that you could call self-righteous as believers. And you can be as passionate about God, you can be zealous about God, but you can actually serve God in a way that is far from his heart. It's possible to be entirely sold out to God and trying to serve him with all you've got sacrificially, but in the way you do it, the way we do it, we could be so very far from how he wants us to represent him. When we see ourselves and we say, wow, I'm saved, he came for me, he died for my sins, it transforms how we then go about representing him. Without that revelation, we run the risk of, in our attempts at service to him, not representing the true heart of who he really is. The poet Seven says this. I love to do this with my congregation. I always quote Christian rappers as poets and theologians. The great theologian Lecrae states this in his works. But the poet Seven says this: this world will die long before receiving you, because we can't even feed a few. They're seeing us, but not seeing you. Wow. Those words cut deep. And he's referring to the point that when we as individuals, as believers, or even a church, when we're in deficit, when we're coming from a place of deficit, when we're not coming from the right angle, then God is not actually seen through us. He's not seen in our church. He's not seen in our individual lives. He doesn't get seen. And the earnest and passionate prayer of my heart is that in our lives, when people see us, they could catch a glimpse of God. Just a glimpse, that they could catch sight of him, that they could see something different. They could say, wait a minute, what did I just see there? Wait a minute, what was that? Jesus actually addresses this in Matthew 7. He says, by their fruit, everyone say fruit. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? See, our lives are meant to reflect another person's life, the life of Jesus Christ. And as we go about, if you're a believer in this place, as we go about our daily lives, people are meant to be able to see him through our lives. We're meant to be a resource to this world, to each other. Fruit is something pleasant. Fruit is something sweet, something nourishing, something beneficial and sustaining. And people are meant to see us as a resource of that. But if they come to you and there's thorns and thistles, they come and they're like, ah, oh, I thought I might have been able to get something from there. I'd always heard they were a Christian, and I thought there might have been something there from me. But when I went close, it actually hurt. That was quite unpleasant. When they come to encounter one who they think might have an answer for them, and it's, actually, that was a bit nasty. That was very judgmental. That was quite condemning. I didn't enjoy that at all. And as their finger was spiked on the thorn, they encountered a prick. Maybe a small prick, maybe a big prick. They encountered a prick. Now, you may be new here or return to church after a bad experience or a long time, and you could have said, you know, I've been to church before, or I've trusted in Christians before, I've gone to believers before, and I was expecting something sweet, I was expecting something pleasant, I was expecting there to be something beneficial for me, but all I encountered was a prick. I reached in, and all I found, I went there to get help. I thought they would have something for me. I thought this was who Jesus was, but what a prick. Just want to say that I cleared that joke with Pastor Mark before the service. When they come to us, do they find mercy, grace, kindness, compassion? Or they encounter mean-spiritedness, cruelty, jealousy, backbiting, rebellion, spitefulness, gossip, cynicism, negativity, hypocrisy? Now look, every single one of us, we do exhibit those bad fruits. Every single one of us, people have come to us before and they've been spiked. They've encountered the wrong thing. But what I want to impress upon you guys this morning is that our job, our duty, our call is to grow as disciples of Christ, and less will people find that spike, and more will they find someone whose lives represents and demonstrates the life and love of Jesus Christ. That they would see Him and not us. They wouldn't encounter just more fallenness, more brokenness, more pettiness. They wouldn't just encounter those who are scraping and struggling and striving to get ahead in the rat race, but they would encounter those who live on a higher level, a higher plane. They would encounter those who are spiritual and are so full of the Spirit that they exhibit the fruit of the Spirit. If you want to know how spiritual you are, well, the Word gives us a great way to assess this. It's called the fruit of the Spirit. If you're spiritual, you will exhibit the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, long-suffering, gentleness, all these things. If we're full of the Spirit, if we're spiritual, well then the fruit of the Spirit is the way we judge that. If they find mean-spiritedness, cruelty, if they find someone who's tight-fisted, if they find someone who lacks generosity, if they find someone who is cynical in their words, if they find that person who, when the rest of the office is bagging out the boss, they join in, when they find that person who never lifts a finger for anyone, when they find that person at work who clock watches and as soon as that clock ticks time, they're out of there without a help for anyone, when they find all these things, when they see these things, they can't see Him. It's clouded, it's cluttered. St. Francis of Assisi said this amazing quote, "Preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words." You see, expressing our faith is not about standing on a chair and lecturing and moralizing. It's not about these things. Preaching the gospel is so much more than this. And the most spiritual thing you can do with your faith is to over-practicalize it. And I'm not speaking against any of the aspects of spirituality that we can enter into in church life, whatever that may be. I'm not speaking about that. But if we don't have a practicality to our spirituality, we're actually missing the point. And we're not allowing the fruit that the Spirit is meant to produce in our lives to start to be produced. The fruit of the Spirit, it's a metric, it's a measuring stick. When we practicalize our faith, we become a resource to a broken and fallen world. People will come up, will come to you, they'll sidle up to you. When you're at your kid's sporting event, the dad will come and stand next to you and start to quiz you, start to inquire what's different about you and your family and your workplace. They will come to you for guidance. In your study group, you will be seen as that resource. The discipleship journey is one of bigness, it's one of largeness, it's one of capacity increase, it's one of excellence. And I see such a heart of excellence, I see such a heart of love and joy over this house. You know, I'm speaking to the converted here, I'm preaching to the choir, I'm speaking to a church that I know is already in this place. And I can see such a joy and a love and an understanding of the grace and mercy, the kindness and compassion of God in this place. But you know what? Let us never have the attitude of I've arrived. Because people need to see him. People need to see him. Let us have the attitude of Isaiah, who said, woe is me. Who's constantly looking at himself and saying, I need to change. I need to go further. I need to be better discipled. I need to grow in love. I need more of the fruit of the Spirit. Let me ask you these questions. Is your house a hospital? Or is it just a fortress for you and your family? Is your vehicle an ambulance? A counselor's chair? Is the passenger seat in your vehicle a counselor's chair? When you buy your shopping, where is the room for hospitality for others, for those that will be invited into your house and work will be put into welcoming people in and demonstrating the love and the life of Christ to people? In our workplaces, how are we viewed when they've seen that strategically placed scripture on your desk, when in your study group they've seen that cross on your laptop, when you've spoken, when they've asked you what you're doing on your weekend, and when they've caught sight that you're a Christian, how do they view him through your life? Man, what challenging questions to ask ourselves. Can I put to you that our Father's plan is that they would see him through us. And so if we're not deliberately and strategically in our lives letting the fruit of the Spirit bud out so that they can see him, then we've fallen far short of God's intended purpose for discipleship and what he regards as true spirituality. Are your words uplifting and encouraging? Are you generous? Are you hospitable? Are you welcoming? Are you sacrificial? And it's in all the small things. You know, I'll tell you something very small. My wife, I love this. In her office, in her workplace, she bakes cupcakes at night and takes cupcakes in for the entire office. And I've seen how good friends she is with all the not yet saved people in her workplace. And they know she's a pastor's wife, and she's a pastor herself. How much does that speak of who God is to that workplace? We want them to come to us and ask us, how do you give like that? Why are you the most generous person in this place? You never expect anything in return. Why, whenever I come to you, are you so full of gracious words? Why? How did you get so merciful? You know what? You're the one that always told me the truth. When other people butted me up, you're the one that always told me the truth in love. You know what? Why, how are you so hopeful? I know what you're going through. I know what your family's going through, and yet you're so full of hope. You're so full of joy. Even in this valley you're walking in, you're so full of joy. How do you do that? What is it about that? I would be a crumpled mess. How have you made it through this challenge? You know what? When you kind of blew up at all of us, and you kind of lost your cool, I'm really blown away by how you actually came around and apologized to all one of us and owned up to what you did. Wow, I mean, people don't normally do that. They normally buckle down. See, it's not about being perfect. Christ doesn't ask for perfection. He asks for Christ-likeness in our approach, our love, our life, our mercy and our grace towards others. Thank you for helping me through this challenge. You know what? Thank you for offering to drive me home. I know you live the complete opposite way, and people that live near me didn't even offer. Thank you for offering to drop me home. Thank you for helping me to move house. Thank you for always being there. Thank you for the text I received when I was fired. You know, I just thought the workplace had forgotten about me. Thank you for checking up on me. Let's over-practicalize our faith. You know, in the Word, we never see Jesus judge or condemn sinners or people of ill repute. He hangs out with them. He blesses them. He builds relationship. He only condemns the self-righteous. He condemns hypocrites and the religious legalists. But there's only one time we see Jesus move to physical, violent action. And this should make us sit up and take notice. One time. And we find it in all four gospel accounts showing its importance. What could be there? What, aside from self-righteousness or hypocrisy, legalism, sin, what could it be that could make Jesus resort to physical violent action? What could it be? In John 2, it says this, "In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables." The Jewish law required a half shekel temple tax once a year. And if you came from a foreign part of the empire, you couldn't pay this with foreign coin because, you know, it would have Caesar's head on it and he thought he was a god. That's idolatry. You can't give that into the temple. So you got to change the money. That's why we got money changing on. If you're coming to offer a sacrifice from somewhere further afield than Judea, maybe you're from Galilee or Antioch or other areas where the diaspora of Jews resided, you don't want to carry a bull the whole way. So, you know, you sell your resource, you get money, and then you go to Jerusalem and you buy your heifer, you buy your lamb, you buy your goat there. So there's people selling livestock. People are selling doves. If you were poor, doves were the offering of the poor. Doves were the offering that poor people offered. So, you know, we need to be able to sell doves. So you got money changers, cattle and sheep sellers, you got dove sellers. These are all providing a range of services to those who are coming to worship. These are necessary services. The services in themselves was not the problem. So what was so wrong with what was going on? In Mark 11, and we're not getting to the big problem just yet, says Jesus would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. So we've also got the courts had become a thoroughfare. It had four entry points. You could use it as a shortcut. You could get from to the Mount of Olives quicker. You could get wherever you needed to go quicker. For starters and aside, let me say that the house of God is not a shortcut to anywhere. The house of God is not somewhere that you go through to our own agendas, our own priorities, our own focus, our own prosperity. We don't go through the house of God. We come to the house of God. Well, my agenda's over there, but I think I might be able to get there more quickly if I go through the house of God. You know, if I come to the house of God, I'm sure I can get to my priorities, my prosperity quicker if I come through the house of God. The house of God is where we sacrifice. The house of God is where we're planted. The house of God is, if we're a believer in this place, we serve the house of God. It's not a shortcut to anywhere. So we've got multiple infringements going on here, and Jesus refers to the place being a den of thieves, so I'm assuming there's some markup going in the services being provided. Perhaps unfair levels of markup are going on, and if you consider the doves or the offering of the poor, that would have made it especially more repugnant to Jesus. But we're still not getting to the big issue here. We're still not getting to the big issue at play that moved him to violence. There's something else much more insidious going on here that got Jesus mad. Have I strung you all on long enough now? Are you all interested? You all want to know what's going on here? Well, there's different temple areas. You've got the holy place, the most holy. You've got the priest court, you've got several courts. These are all the inner courts. What was going on didn't happen in any of these locations. You see, here is what made what was happening much worse. In fact, so bad that Jesus was moved to physical violent action. Did I mention that? Physical violent action. one time. The Jews were God's people, and in all of these aforementioned locations, these were locations where only they could go. These were areas where only God's people were allowed. They wouldn't have dreamed of conducting any of these activities in any area of the inner courts. It wouldn't have even crossed their mind. They wouldn't have dared. But all that was happening was occurring in a large temple area called the outer courts. They wouldn't have dared to do anything they were doing in any area of the inner courts, but they dared to do it in the outer court. Another name for the outer court of the temple was the court of the Gentiles. A Gentile was a non-Jew. People who under old covenant were not considered God's people. The outer courts, the court of the Gentiles, was God's provision for those who were not Jews. The court of the Gentiles was God's provision for those who weren't his people. It was where those who were not God's people could go to meet him, could go to pray to him, could come to learn about him. The outer court was God's provision for outsiders. And those who were God's people had decided that God's provision to the Gentiles was an optional extra. God's provision to those who didn't know him, it wasn't that important. It's not that big a deal. In fact, you know, this place where God has designed the outsider to come and meet him, to come and know him, to come and learn about him, to be come and be welcomed, to be embraced, to be pointed towards him. Maybe we can even use this area to aid and enhance our own ability to worship him. I mean, we're the ones that know him. Maybe this is about us. Maybe this should be about us. Maybe this should be about us being able to worship him more conveniently. Maybe this should be about us being able to get to where we need to get quicker. Maybe this should be about our prosperity. Maybe this should be about us. The intended purpose, God's intended purpose of this outer court was of no importance to them. They had decided that when it came to the house of God, those who didn't know him, the outsider, it was optional. In fact, it wasn't needed at all. They should have been the first people to have had that area cleared, pristine, and lined up along that wall, ready to converse, to greet, to welcome, to explain, to guide, to read to introduce to show God's heart to show hospitality to. This is what this area was for. But they made it all about them. God's people had decided that reaching outsiders was not that important to God. Through their actions, their conduct, they had decided. By what they had set up in that area, they had decided. The church of Jesus Christ is for the outsider. The house of God is for the outsider. You know, often when I explain this scripture to people, they sometimes, even if they've been a believer a while, they had no idea there was even a part of the temple that was designed for Gentiles to come and meet with him. They have no idea. This is what was going on. This was the clearing of the temple. The church of Jesus Christ, the house of God, is a provision for the outsider. Now, outsider might sound like a slightly harsh term, but let me explain something. The moment someone steps into this place, they can be an insider. If you're new in this place, if you're seeking, if you're searching, if you're inquiring in this place, you can join this family. They'll welcome you in, and you get to start at the finish line. You receive what every single person in this place has: belonging, identity, you're a son or a daughter of God, righteousness, salvation, justification. You get it all. You start at the finish line because Jesus did it all. He declared, "It is finished." And what he declared finished, let no man declare unfinished. All we got to do is believe. All we got to do is accept it. So if you're in this place and you feel like an outsider, you can be an insider. You're in the family of faith. You're in the club. You're welcomed in. You get to know the secret password. You'll get taught the secret handshake. You get to use Pastor Mike's secret staff bathroom. You get given the Wi-Fi password, and you can park in the car park after the church is closed and download things on your laptop. Church of Jesus Christ is not a club for the initiated. It's not a holy huddle. That's not the Father's intention. The heart of our Father is for those on the outside. It's for the one. It's for the lost. It's for the hurting. It's for the fallen. It's for the broken. And His house needs to reflect that. And a church that does not see its role, or a believer who does not see their role to see outsiders come in and become insiders, has become a shadow of the original intended purpose of our Father. The court of the Gentiles was the way to the temple, highly symbolic and literally the way to God, the path to God. And in order to make their own lives easier, they had cluttered this place. Can you imagine the stink? Have you ever driven past one of those sheep trucks heading to Fremantle Port? Can you imagine the noise? Animals, wings flapping, animals bleating, people hawking and hustling their wares, coins. Can you imagine? Filled up with stalls and people. How was anyone meant to catch a glimpse of God in that? How was anyone meant to see God? This outer court was God's provision to the outsiders. And that is what drove Jesus to His only recorded act of physical violence when that area was profaned. That is what offended Jesus more than any sin, more than any legalism, more than any hypocrisy that He encountered. That is what offended Him more than anything else. Believer, let's take note. Matthew 21, He says this, and this is referencing what I'm saying, the court of the Gentiles. My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations. In the same way that Jesus declared to His disciples, let them come to Me and do not stop them, He was declaring, this is for everybody. This is for the outsider. This is for those who don't know Me. And in fact, you're meant to be a part of helping them to see Me. You're meant to be a part of welcoming them in. And this message, I want it to be a challenge to us all. But this church is great. There's a reason I've asked Pastor Dan to mentor me. We're kindred spirit. I know this is a church that is built for the outsider. This is a church that is built for the uninitiated. It's built to show people Christ. I know it is. But like Uzziah, let's never settle. Let's do all we can to unclutter. If I could give a definition of discipleship, it's the clearing of the outer court in our lives. Did you know we are now the temple? We are now the temple of the Holy Spirit. So if we're the temple, God has made provision in this temple, in that temple, in this temple, in that temple, in every temple in this room. God has made provision in your life for the outsider to meet Him, to come to Him, to get to know Him, to be welcomed in. Are you being deliberate about uncluttering this area? Are you being deliberate about sweeping this area? Are you being purposeful about keeping this area clear so that they can catch a glimpse of God? Are people getting spiked when they reach in, or are they finding the fruit of the Spirit, life-giving fruit? And I want you to look what happens when we clear the path. In Matthew 21, it says, then. Everyone say, then. Then the blind and the lame came to Him in the temple, and He healed them. Once the obstacles were removed, once the valley was filled in, once the mountain was made low, once the crooked path was made straight, once condemnation and judgment was swept out, once agendas, priorities, individual focuses, shortcuts, once all of it was swept clear, then they caught a glimpse of God. He took this confusing, cluttered place and He made it into a hospital. The blind, those who couldn't see Him, the lame, those who were broken, they could come to Him and He healed them. We have Christ in our lives. And in the same way, we're a mobile temple. We can go to them, we take him, but can they see him? Are we making sure they can see him? Are we making sure they can catch a glimpse of God? If you could all just stand to your feet right now. We're in a broken world, a hurting world, and there are those who are searching, those who have questions, those who are confused, those who have encountered a spike, they've encountered the wrong thing in people, those who are downtrodden, those who have met the wrong examples of Christians, and those who have thought it was all about the do's and don'ts, those who have been mired in legalism. And our goal each Sunday here and in our individual lives, in our workplaces, in our schools, is to clear the outer court so that those who know him not can meet him. Altering our very lives to make sure that those who need to catch a glimpse of God, that they see him and not us when they encounter us. Right now, we're going to sing an awesome song. And this song literally speaks of, the bridge of this song, Reckless Love, speaks of what Jesus did in our lives. That he cleared everything so that we could see him. And right now, if everyone could just close their eyes, I just want to ask, before we sing this song, do you need this Jesus in your life? You know what? You have a salvation and identity based not on your actions, your performance, your behavior, not based on anything you can or can't do, but based on the work of Jesus on the cross. You can have all that. All you have to do is say, wow, I'll take that. All you have to do is believe. All you have to do is build your life on that solid, stable, unmovable foundation. And if in this place you need this Jesus in your life, whether you're accepting him for the first time or the first time in a long time, I want you to sing these words like they apply to you right now. I want you to sing these words and see what God has done to clear the way to even bring you here today. And as we sing these words after the service, there's going to be some leaders at the front here. And would love for you to come forward, would love to pray for you, would love to acknowledge the decision you've made. But come on, let's sing these words together right now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more great resources and to keep yourself up to date, head to our website. Visit therocks.church.